Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Let the lawsuits fly is the title of today's episode because we're going to be talking about not one, but two lawsuits against Washington State's newly enacted ban on so-called assault rifles, one of them from the NRA, one of them from a local organization. We'll also be talking about a third lawsuit that has to do with an issue I'm very passionate about, which is open government, government transparency, government accountability. Lawmakers in Washington State, Democrats in particular, have been trying all sorts of ways to keep information from you that you have a right to know about. And so there is a group called the Washington Coalition for Open Government that has now filed a lawsuit over the use of a tactic called legislative privilege. And rather than lawmakers who were using that tactic, which is against the law, and I think that's very clear, rather than them just saying, hey, we're not going to use it anymore, so we save taxpayers money on the inevitable lawsuit, of course, they just stuck to their guns. And here we are now in the midst of a lawsuit. So we will have a board member from the Washington Coalition for Open Government join us momentarily. Also, man, Nicole, I got to bring you in for this because we've been taping interviews this week with state lawmakers as part of, you know, the legislative session ended on Sunday. And so it had been hard to get them in studio because they've been down in Olympia, right? But we have been taping a few that we're going to be airing parts of tomorrow and on Sunday with two Democratic state senators, one Democratic state representative. So yesterday we taped with Senator John Lovick, who is a Democrat in Washington State. And we talked about all these issues with the session with him. But we also brought up, and you got to stick around because we're going to play this portion of the interview. We brought up Councilman Josh Binda, who is this embattled 23-year-old councilman in Lynnwood, Washington. And I was shocked at the bluntness with which Senator John Lovick called for him to resign during our conversation.
He'll explain a little bit more, but he's definitely, I feel like he's put in the effort and he was treated poorly by Binda, it sounds like, and he is does not care anymore.
I was like shook by his answers because, I mean, one, I'm used to politicians just giving me the runaround. But, you know, Josh Binda, he's a 23-year-old young black man, and John Lovick is black. And I think he felt like when Josh Binda came out that he could do a lot of good for the community. And so John Lovick, who's been in politics and public service forever, you know, puts his name out there and endorses him. And now he is, like, beyond done. It's one of my favorite clips from an interview because I just love the bluntness with which he answered the questions about Josh Binda.
Yes, absolutely. It sounds like he tried to help and was ignored and done.
Indeed. So we'll get to that momentarily. But let's dive into the first of three lawsuits that we're going to discuss today. So two of the lawsuits have to do with, of course, the ban on semi-automatic assault rifles in Washington State, which Governor Jay Inslee signed into law yesterday. And in doing so, as soon as his pen hit paper, now that's law in Washington State. You can no longer buy things like AR-15 rifles in the state of Washington. If you already owned one, fine, you're grandfathered in. But we knew that lawsuits were coming. I mean, even yesterday at the press conference or at the bill signing, Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who has been the one behind this, you know, pushing for it since I think 2016, he closed his remarks with sort of a warning to those who would sue over it. Listen.
We understand there'll be lawsuits challenging the ban on the sale of assault weapons. My team told me, I think one's been filed already, I think. You know, that's to be expected, and that's their right. That's the way our system works. We're nation of laws, and they have the right to challenge that. I will just remind them and everybody in this room that we have, in the AG's office, we defend all bills passed by the legislature and by the people through the initiative process, and we have defended a number of bills related to common sense gun reform, and our record so far is pretty good against the NRA and against the Second Amendment Foundation. We are undefeated, and we plan to keep that record intact. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for
we are undefeated and we plan to keep that record intact. We had a real feisty debate about Bob Ferguson yesterday. If you haven't watched it, you should go back and watch the show because Nicole and I have a disagreement about his level of likability. But anyway, so as the Attorney General alluded to there, there have now been two lawsuits filed against this, one from the NRA. I'll just read a little excerpt from the lawsuit because it's pretty lengthy. But the NRA argued in its lawsuit in part, few states have ever tried to adopt such an extreme measure, and for good reason, as no less an authority than the Supreme Court has already recognized that semi-automatic rifles, quote, traditionally have been widely accepted as lawful. They go on to write, All of that dooms any effort to claim that prohibiting these ubiquitous arms is consistent with the, quote, historical tradition that delimits the outer bounds of the right to keep and bear arms. The second lawsuit that was filed as part of this is from a Bellevue-based organization called the Second Amendment Foundation. Again, both of these lawsuits, neither of them are a surprise, and you're going to see very similar arguments in both of them. This is going to boil down to whether this is constitutional or not. So in that second lawsuit, again, I'll just read a little excerpt of it for you. In doing so, in banning them, the state of Washington has criminalized one of the most common and important means by which its citizens can exercise their fundamental right to self-defense. By banning manufacturing, importation, distribution, and sale of common semi-automatic rifles, the state has barred law-abiding residents from legally acquiring common rifles and has deprived them of an effective means of self-defense and their fundamental individual right to keep and bear arms. So again, this is the natural course of things. You know, one of my chief frustrations with the legislature, as we're talking about all these lawsuits that come from laws that are passed or actions from lawmakers, is, you know, there was an effort from Republicans. Republicans, I think, in the State House in Olympia realized that this was probably the year Democrats had enough support to get this ban through. And so there had been an effort from Republicans to add an amendment to it that would have said, look, we're not going to fight you anymore on this, but it has to survive a legal challenge before it goes into effect. And Democrats are like, no, we don't care if it's constitutional. It's going to go into effect the moment the governor signs it. But in doing that, again, it sort of not only wastes money, but it puts a bunch of confusion into the system for firearms shops, et cetera, who are left, you know, not being able to sell these firearms when down the road they might be able to. And so it just, to me, it makes things messy when it doesn't need to be messy. So we're going to monitor this. And I also mentioned that we just taped yesterday with State Senator John Lovick. And today we're taping with another Democratic State Senator, Mark Mullett, who both of them supported the ban on assault weapons. And I would say both of them are toward the more moderate end of the Democratic caucus in the Senate. And so I very much look forward to tomorrow playing those parts of their conversations as we question these Democrats on why they felt as if they could do sort of an end route around the Constitution. And one of the arguments I've had during this whole debate is my opposition to this is not on the basis of, you know, being a gun nut, as some people would have you believe. It's constitutional. I make a living and have the past 15 years off the First Amendment to the Constitution. So I don't like to see any other amendment to the Constitution be to have government try to erode it. There is a really difficult process that you could go through as a nation to amend the Constitution. And if you have, and if you believe that the majority of people in the United States don't believe that the Second Amendment serves the function that it was intended to serve anymore, you should go about trying to change it. But our nation is supposed to be governed by this document. And for you to slowly try to erode or chip away at or misconstrue one of the amendments, to me, puts all the other amendments to the Constitution and our rights as Americans at risk. And so by all means, please do the difficult, arduous task of trying to get the states to ratify a change to the Constitution. But in the meantime, I just think trying to find ways to get around an amendment to the Constitution, is that any more or less egregious than them trying to change the First Amendment or pass laws that would abridge your right to the free press or your right to assemble, et cetera? So I, yes, have an issue with it. So we're going to, of course, continue to monitor that issue. I know it's now it's interesting because I feel like the national news just started to pick up headlines about how Washington State passed this. And I'm like, these are a little late on your coverage of it because it's already been signed into law. Okay, as we continue our theme of lawsuits, 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 we have talked on the show quite a bit about, I'm going to catch up folks who haven't, you know, been watching or listening to the show for a long time, but we've been really passionate against pushing back against efforts from primarily Democrats in Washington State in the legislature trying to hide information from the public. I mean, for the love of all things, you know, we have the Public Records Act in Washington, and it is supposed to allow for a great deal of transparency for us in the media and you in the public to be able to get access to documents, to emails, to figure out what's going on in government and what's behind some of the decisions that they're making. That's our right. They work for us. But the issue is that you have some lawmakers who are doing everything they can. They literally passed a law several years ago to exempt themselves from the Public Records Act. And thankfully, the governor got so many emails, like I think it was like 20,000 emails about it, that he vetoed that law, which was great. Good for you, Governor Jay Inslee. But then even after all of that, you had this news at the end of 2022 that Democratic leaders in Olympia were exerting something they were calling legislative privilege in withholding certain documents when they were requested by the media or members of the public. And folks in the media were like, legislative privilege is a thing, but it can't be used in this way. And it seems very clear legally. So just yesterday, Washington's Coalition for Open Government decided to file a lawsuit against the lawmakers who are doing this and the legislature in Olympia to sue over this use of legislative privilege to hide documents from people. Robert McClure is a board member for the Washington Coalition for Open Government, and he was nice enough to join us to talk about the lawsuit and the arguments therein. Robert, welcome to Undivided. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for being in the fight. this is a story I just wish more people would care about. I know it gets into like minutia of government, but it's something that regardless of politics, we don't want the government hiding stuff from us. So first, for people who aren't familiar, what is the Washington Coalition for Open Government?
The Washington Coalition for Open Government is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that advocates for transparency in the Washington state government. And that's primarily through the Public Records Act and the Open Public Meetings Act.
Gotcha. And give a little bit of background on the people who are part of the board. I mean, because you have a background in journalism, for instance, and I know that there's other individuals outside of the journalistic realm.
Sure. Yeah. No, and that's one of the beauties of the coalition is that it spans the ideological spectrum and pulls from people from various different walks in life. We have some journalists like me. We have also a number of lawyers, but we also have people who are just public-spirited citizens, such as Toby Nixon, our president emeritus, who was a legislator and currently serves as the on the Kirkland City Council. So people from various walks of life who are dedicated to the principle that the people rule the government rather than the other way around.
Yeah. So my viewers and listeners will be familiar with the issue of legislative privilege, and you've been nice enough to come on and discuss it before. Was a lawsuit kind of the only way to move forward from here? You know, because when the issue of legislative privilege was first raised in the media and how it was being utilized, was there an opportunity for lawmakers to just say, yeah, or bad, rather than it coming to this?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Brandy. Once we discovered that the House at first had quietly started citing this non-existent privilege, you know, we asked them about it, and reporters asked Lori Jenkins in particular about it. The House Speaker, who is really behind a lot of this, from what we can tell. She's named in the suit. We don't want to go to court. That's not a great way to have to solve your disputes, but it is the way that they ultimately are solved under the Public Records Act. Yes, the legislature could have simply stopped citing this non-existent clause. And in fact, in the lawsuit, Speaker Jenkins is quoted as saying, when she's asked about this, well, we're going to have to solve this through a court case. So she essentially invited this lawsuit. We would rather they would have simply stopped citing this bogus PRA exemption.
Yeah. So take people through just sort of the cliff notes of the basis for the lawsuit, your chief argument that you think is going to win this for you.
Sure. Remember that it was the people of the state who voted overwhelmingly to pass the forerunner of today's Public Records Act. And although that has been, a bunch of exemptions have been put into that act by the legislature, there is no statute or constitutional amendment allowing them to assert a legislative privilege under the Public Records Act. It's something that the legislature started doing, should be noted, after a coalition of news organizations sued to get a declaratory judgment that the legislature is in fact subject to the Public Records Act. And that happened, and we thought that was settled. A couple of years later, they started citing this non-existent privilege. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Who's paying for your legal fees?
Well, those fees, right now, the chief litigator is Joan Mell, who is on the Washington Coalition for Open Government board. I have to say, I don't know that we're paying Joan. I don't know.
Bless your heart, Joan.
I don't think so. But I should say that an important thing about the Public Records Act is that if you sue and the agency withholding the record is found to be in the wrong, fees can be assessed, penalties can be assessed. And that's a really valuable part of the act because it allows the people to hold the government accountable. Well, and so that can help pay attorneys' fees and costs.
Well, that's, you know, nice in theory, but that is taxpayer money, is it not?
It is absolutely taxpayer money. And I will say that the WCAG board is just sick to see all the government lawyers out there trying to run up. This is at the very top, but, you know, you can go out and find a bunch of lawyers who are foolishly defending local governments that have flagrantly violated the act, despite the fact that all these penalties can be assessed and are. We don't feel good about that. That's a terrible thing. What the solution is for the government to start following the law.
Yeah, and it's really disappointing. And so I guess I would ask sort of in this overarching way, you just detailed the fight that's been going on, I would say in earnest since like 2018, 2017, 2018, to try to just get the government to follow the Public Records Act, to not find these weird ways to keep information from the public. I mean, they do work for us. They're supposed to be public servants. So I guess what should voters of all stripes think about the lengths that the legislature has gone to, that some lawmakers have gone to try to find ways around just being transparent?
Yeah, I agree. Whatever your political ideology is, we all need for the government to be responsive to people. And so, I mean, I would say call your legislator, email your legislator. They need to hear from the people. And we haven't gone out with a public a cry for public response on this right yet. But get on the WCAG mailing list. It's WCAG.org. And you can sign up for the mailing list. Also, obviously, we're on Twitter and Facebook. And so if and when it comes to that kind of a thing, we will let people know. But I would say if someone's listening right now and they're unhappy about this, just send an email to your legislator. An individual who emails a legislator, that gets their attention.
Yeah. And you mentioned your website. Can people also go there to donate? Because you mentioned you're a nonprofit.
We are a nonprofit. And you certainly can support us there if you'd like.
Yeah. What would your message be to the lawmakers who've been exerting this, as you said, it doesn't exist, this non-existent legislative privilege, who could stop all this, stop the lawsuit, stop the waste of taxpayer money that's going to result from it and just do the right thing? What would your message be to them, Robert?
The message is do the right thing. Do the thing that you're supposed to do under the law passed by the people to whom you are owing of your job. That's who you serve. That's our basic message, is to honor the people and the people's will.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it. Robert McClure with the Washington Coalition for Open Government. I mean, I know you guys have been just out front in this, and I certainly appreciate the work you're trying to do to make sure that we can do our jobs better. The public has access to what it should have access to. So well done, sir.
Happy to be here, and thank you so much for covering this.
Yeah. So stupid. It's so stupid that we even have to have this. I mean, when, in particular, the Speaker of the House, Lori Jenkins, realized how much pushback there was on their use of this legislative privilege to hide documents, she should have been like, you know what, my bad. We work for you. If people are really opposed to this, because Governor Jay Inslee, I will give the governor credit. He has said some time ago that he refuses to use legislative privilege to withhold documents from people. And so if the governor is capable of making that promise to individuals, why does Democratic leadership think they're so above that? It's bizarre. And I'll just read, I know we save comments for the end of the show, but I'll just read one that came through from Sergeant Pickles 13 on YouTube. he or she, I don't know, Sergeant Pickles. If they lose the lawsuit on constitutional grounds, any money the state uses to defend those policies should be garnished from the paychecks of legislators and the AG. I mean, the AG's office is forced in some instances to defend lawmakers for things they do, or lawmakers can get private counsel as well. But I like the idea of garnishing the wages of state lawmakers who use legislative privilege and refuse to stop, thus forcing the Washington Coalition for Open Government to file a lawsuit over it. Everybody should be mad about this. It doesn't matter what lawmakers and what party are using it. Even if you're a Democrat and you're like, those are my people, they work for you. Doesn't it bother you just a little bit that they want to hide emails and documents from you, the people who pay their salary? It's just bizarre to me sometimes the ways in which people will find a reason to defend someone because they belong to their political party. Bizarre. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the embattled Linwood City Councilman who's posting shirtless pics on Instagram to pitch his tour to speak to school children. And I've got some an interesting clip of an interview I taped with a Democratic senator who thinks it's time for that councilman to resign. So we'll be playing that. But first, MethodWorks.com. MethodWorks.com, one of our wonderful sponsors to the show. They do all things tech for your small business, regardless of what you need. It's a one-stop shop. So whether you need computers for your employees, you need to get stuff to the cloud, you just need a 24-hour help desk and a local company that's going to pick up the phone when you're having a technology crisis. Nicole and I have been having some of those lately. It's really, really useful to have someone who you know is going to be on the other line to walk you through it as a small business. And the other nice thing is MethodWorks is offering a free security review and a full month of free security monitoring to Undivided listeners and viewers who want to try their service and see what they have to offer. So reach out to MethodWorks at MethodWorks.com, MethodWorks.com. Again, they are one-stop shop for all your technology needs as a small business. Mark will help you out there. Just make sure to let them know that you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. So in addition to whatever other technology needs you might have, you can also take advantage of that free security review and 1 month of free security monitoring. All right, you guys will be familiar with Josh Binda. If not, allow me to show you a shirtless photo of Josh Binda, a 23-year-old councilman for the city of Linwood, Washington. There it is for those watching on the video screen. You've been blessed with a shirtless image of Josh Binda. So look, Josh Binda, I'll just describe a little bit of it. He's been embattled for some time. There are calls for him to resign. There is a recall effort going on against him. And it's over a variety of things, but a lot of it centers around, he does like speeches to school kids about, like, I guess it's personal empowerment and sort of, you know, trying to empower young children. But the first issue, one of the first issues came up when he used his council office as part of shooting a video to promote those speeches. And then he posted that shirtless pic to promote speeches to school children, which is just weird, dude. It's just weird. And there have been a variety of other issues that have come up. And Josh Binda has said, this is racism, that if you are questioning what he's doing, racist, you're racist and or ageist or whatever, because he's 23 years old, and he has given no indication that he plans to step down even amid calls for him to resign and amid a recall effort. So I mentioned that yesterday we taped a lengthy interview with Washington State Senator John Lovick. So John Lovick is a Democrat. He is also a Black man, and he endorsed Josh Binda when Josh Binda ran for the Linwood City Council. And so I asked Senator Lovick towards the tail end of our interview what he thought about the whole situation. And I will say I was very taken aback by just how blunt Senator Lovick was about his thoughts on Josh Binda's behavior and the future of his political career. Listen, do you think he should resign?
Yes, yes, and yes.
You do think he should
resign? Absolutely, without a doubt.
I
think that there's due process, and I believe in due process. But when I met Joshua, I think it was 2021, he was a talented young man. I was most impressed with him. And I didn't hesitate. I endorsed him without hesitation. I just said yes. I think he impressed me with being a young man, and he had a vehicle that he could really do a lot of things, particularly with young people, getting them engaged in the political process and in the political community. But, you know, I learned a lot as a young man, and I went to a couple of elected officials who had gone through some of the struggles that I had to deal with as an elected official, and I listened to what they said. And what I found is that he was not going to listen. I advised him he should take the lollipop out of his mouth when he's in front of a hearing. I told him he should dress appropriately. And it was very, very clear to me that he was not going to listen. And I one thing I told him is I said, a line that I used as a state trooper, confidence starts with appearance. I said, people see you. I don't care what you know or don't know. If they see that your appearance is great, if you're dressed sharp, I said, that just changes sometimes their perspective. And I found that he wasn't listening. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I'm totally embarrassed with the guy. And I'll just say this, and I'll say this just as clear as I can. When he posted the picture of half of his face and half of the face of John Lewis, that was over the line for me, because I had the great, great honor of meeting Congressman John Lewis, a man who came within an inch of his life being beaten after crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge on Bloody Sunday. And when he tried and compare what he is doing to what John Lewis is doing, it's just over the line.
You think it's an immaturity thing or an ego thing?
I think it's a little bit of both. Because I've talked with people who are reliable people, and I've asked them to speak with him, and he listens to no one. And you have to listen to people in this business. I said it earlier, you listen, you learn, you help, and you lead. And if you're not going to listen, you're not going to be successful in politics. I went to a gentleman by the name of Carl Gibson. He was an Everett City Council member, and he would tell me what to do. He would tell me how to do it. He would tell me how to remain calm, and I listened to him. And you can see, I think I've been somewhat successful. If you're not going to listen, you're not going to be successful in the business. And he, my personal feeling, and I don't have a horse in that race, is that he should resign.
He says he's been saying it's about his race.
You know what? And there will always be racial issues. This is not one of them from my perspective. People elected him. And when you are elected, your obligation is to serve the public that you represent. And I do not think in the posture that he's in that he's appropriately serving the public.
Wow, that was such a direct answer.
Well,
I very rarely get those from anyone.
I have no reason to hold back. As a matter of fact, I was speaking with someone who will remain unnamed, and I'm just embarrassed with what I see, and I'll say that to anyone.
Yeah.
That's just what I feel.
Well, I appreciate the candor. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I know there's a recall effort up there, but it's always hard to put your energy and your name behind someone and try to support them and then have them kind of behave in that way. Damn. That was fire. You might have heard me laughing in the background because we forgot to mute my mic. But when the picture came up of Josh, I hadn't seen it. I hadn't even heard of it until Senator Lovick brought it up in our interview. When the picture comes up of Josh Binda, where he put half his face next to half the face of John Lewis, and the anger that John Lovick had over that is very understandable, but I also think it speaks to an ego issue. And I think it was good to hear from John Lovick for him to say it's not an issue of race. And he's deeply embarrassed for having supported this young man and wants him to resign. So I would like to see Councilman Josh Binda try to paint the rest of us who've been critical of him as racist when Senator John Lovick has said that he thinks that you ought to resign and he does not think that this is a racial issue, but rather an issue with you not being able to. And perhaps I do think, and Nicole, if you want to pop in, I do think some of it comes down to maturity.
Yes, but I don't see it getting better.
No, I don't
either. Based on his unwillingness to listen to advice, to take any of these very successful, important people's suggestions, as in taking a lollipop out of your mouth.
Yeah, don't have it up at the dais of the city council. Get the lollipop out of your mouth. But also, you know, I think it was really striking for someone like Senator John Lovick to say, as you pointed out earlier, Nicole, that he offered, before coming out this strong, saying Josh Binda ought to resign, he offered counsel to him. He came to him and said, older politician to a younger politician, hey, stop doing these things.
Right.
And Josh Binda didn't care, had no interest, no care or concern in listening to the advice of someone like John Lovick. And then, of course, when he compared himself to the legendary John Lewis, that was sort of over the line.
That was the final straw.
That's wild. So we'll have more from our interview with Senator John Lovick coming up on the show tomorrow. Of course, we talked about a lot of other issues with the legislative session on public safety. And then on the show on Sunday, John Lovick supported Senate Bill 5599, which I have said is a dangerous bill that erodes parental rights. And so he and I had an interesting conversation about his support of 5599. And so that's going to be on the Sundays with Subscribers episode this week, which is exclusive to subscribers. So if you want to sign up to make sure that you hear on Sunday, not from just one Democratic lawmaker who supported that bill, but two of them, we're going to have comments from them on the Sunday show. So you can sign up by visiting undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. All right. Are you in the market to sell your home? Why would you not sell it with our friend Wes Jones? I always see pictures of Wes on Instagram, and he just seems like such a fun guy. He just seems like such a nice guy. And I don't just say that because he's like, Brandy, will you get to the actual advertising? Sellwithwes.com. I just saw pictures of him and his family. And they're like, I'm like, they're so cute. Why would you not want him to be a real estate agent? Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes, we were chatting about it as we were launching the sponsorship. And he said that interest rates and inventory have been down. Buyer demand is up. And if you're in some certain price ranges with your home, multiple offers are back. So he has seen a window of opportunity. And look, he acknowledges, like, look, the real estate market has been all over the place. But Wes and his team and Wes Jones and Associates have an innovative marketing strategy to get the most possible eyeballs on your home, in the market, out of the country. So again, if you're looking to sell your home, visit sellwithwes.com. That's sellwithwes.com. Get a hold of our friend Wes Jones, and you can ask him, is this the right time for me to sell my home? Should I wait a little bit longer? What can you do for me, Wes, when it comes to getting me the best possible price for my home? That's sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. I promised you all an update on my fight with the stranger, and I will tell you, it has reached an unbelievable conclusion. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop! Okay, you will recall that the stranger wrote an article criticizing opposition to Senate Bill 5599, which allows minors to run away from home, show up at a shelter, say, I'm here to seek protected health care, and then the shelter will not call their parents. The shelter will call the state of Washington's Department of Children and Family Services, youth and families, and then they'll try to reunite the families, but they're not going to tell parents where their kids are, which I think is absolutely absurd on its face. It has nothing to do with the kind of care that kids want to receive, whether it's gender care or reproductive care. My issue with it is parental rights. But you'll recall that The Stranger, which is Seattle's alt weekly magazine, The Stranger put out an article, and I'm just going to show you kind of the before, and then you'll recall last week we talked about asking for a retraction and apology. So I'll update you. So the title of the Stranger article was, No, Washington did not just pass a law allowing the state to kidnap and, quote, transgenderify children. And it was this paragraph in particular that I took issue with. It read, conservative figures, politicians, and far-right groups such as the Conservative Ladies of Washington, D-trans activist Ollie London, Washington Representative Leonard Christian, Representative Jim Walsh, and Brandy Cruz say Senate Bill 5599 infringes on parental rights. They assert that the state of Washington is now free to kidnap, disappear, and, quote, transgenderify children without the knowledge or consent of their loving parents, who would be left confused, heartbroken, and financially responsible for any and all costs. So let me just explain what I've underlined there. So they said, and Brandy Cruz. And then they go on to say, they assert that the state of Washington is now free to kidnap, disappear, and transgenderify children. And what I pointed on the show last week is I've never used the phrase transgenderify. I've never even heard that phrase that they're now saying in quotes. And they're saying they assert, so they're lumping all of those people together, saying that we as a group have asserted that the state of Washington is free to kidnap, disappear, and transgenderify children, which I've never said any of those things. I've said that the bill amounts, I think, to government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids, but I've never suggested that the government will now have the legal authority to literally kidnap and disappear your children and then, quote, transgenderify them. So Nicole reached out to The Stranger to ask for a correction and, if they were so inclined, an apology. And we have since last week sent a few emails back and forth with The Stranger, and I'm actually shooketh I find it unbelievable that the stranger even responded, because I was ready to go full Nick Sandman on the stranger. I was ready to go full lawsuit on the stranger over this, because they're clearly trying to paint me as a transphobe, and doing it by quoting a word that I've never used and putting it in my mouth. So the stranger has agreed to update their article. Can you pull up the new edition of it, Nicole? So here it is. So I'm going to compare the old paragraph with the new paragraph. So they got rid of the quotes around transgenderfy. Now they spelt it differently. They got rid of the quotes because it was just a word they made up. Nobody'd use that word. It was just a word they'd made up. And then you'll see that they went from they assert to some of them argue. Some of them argue as like just a way to get around the fact that they totally attributed that to me and I had never said it. So I had expressed to the stranger that, and to the editor of the stranger, like, look, here's my opinion on this. And I'll get to, they also added this long editor's note at the end. I'll get to that in a moment. But what I had told the editor of the stranger and what Nicole had expressed to them as well is you are free to claim, you know, give your opinion that I'm a transphobe. They are free to give the opinion that I'm a transphobe. The same reason I can give my opinion on lawmakers, et cetera. If the stranger had just come out and said, I think Brandy is a transphobe, they have a First Amendment right to be able to say that. What they cannot do, however, is put a word in quotes and attribute it to me as a way to paint me as a transphobe by literally putting a word in my mouth in quotes that I never said. In fact, not only did I have an argument about that, but every other person that was named in that stranger article, Leonard Christian, Rep. Jim Walsh, Conservative Ladies of Washington, Ollie London, they would have had an argument too, that that was an effort to defame and it was against the law in terms of the protections of the law. So I had to laugh at this lengthy, what did they call it, Nicole? I didn't call it a correction. It was like an editor's note. It says clarification. Okay, let's pull up the lengthy clarification that they made at the end of this article. And to me, this was just so passive aggressive. So passive aggressive. It wasn't even a good faith attempt to acknowledge that, yeah, we did something wrong. They wrote clarification. This post originally stated that conservative figures, politicians in far-right groups, such as Conservative Ladies of Washington, D-trans activist Ollie London, Washington Rep. Leonard Christian, Rep. Jim Walsh, and Brandy Cruz, assert that the state of Washington is now free to kidnap, disappear, and transgenderfy children without the knowledge or consent of their loving parents. Though the stranger put the word transgenderfy in quotes to sarcastically flag the transphobia undergirding the arguments against the legislation, a producer for Brandy Cruz's show Undivided objected to the gesture, claiming that Cruz has never stated that the state will use Senate Bill 5599 to transgenderfy children. That's true. Cruz only said, and then they quote from comments I made on way back on February 9th in a video saying, when I was saying, so in theory, you could have a child that runs away from a perfectly happy, healthy household, but perhaps a parent who doesn't want them to get gender reassignment surgery, that would be enough of a reason under state law for a child to run away, go to a shelter to get transgender reassignment surgery, surgical intervention under the protection of the state of Washington, and then to return home a different gender. Imagine that. Imagine if that was your child. So this was the stranger saying, well, she might not have said the word transgenderfy, but her words suggest that she does believe the state will transgenderfy children. And what I, and again, I'm going to get to more of an overarching point about all of this. But what I said in the February 9th episode was based on my interpretation of the law at the time. And in fact, the law was so poorly written that I do believe at the time it suggested that kids could get gender surgery without parental consent. And you know who agreed with that? State Senator Joe Wynn, a progressive and one of the co-sponsors of the bill, who after my segment on February 9th introduced the Brandy Cruz Amendment to clarify that the law would not in fact allow children to get transgender surgery without parental consent. So my interpretation of the law was spot on February 9th. But the stranger, they just could not give. And it's so funny because we started last week's show with a correction for something we got wrong about King County Executive Dow Constantine, and it was pretty unequivocal. And the stranger just hates me so much that the thought of having to issue like a full-on just mea culpa just kills them. But we, you know, I would have sued the stranger over this had they not, on the second effort, taken away the quotes from transgenderfy. And that's all we really wanted. And what I told Rich Smith, who's the editor of the stranger, is your writers can opine if they want that I'm a transphobe. I disagree with that interpretation as someone who has a very libertarian position on transgender issues, but you're free to do that, just as I'm free to opine that the stranger is a worthless rag that makes the city of Seattle
worse and has led to the downfall of a once great city. But you're not free to put words in my mouth or words in the mouth of anyone else who's opposed to this bill and suggest that we said something we did not say. The law does not protect your right to do this. But on the larger grand scheme thing, and Nicole, you said to me like, wow, you're really like content on, you want to fight back on this. The reason why is what the stranger did and what it's continuing to do is to, again, make this an argument about if you're opposed to Senate Bill 5599, you're a transphobe. And I think that's a deeply disingenuous argument because, again, to me, it's about parental rights. And I have never made it an issue about transgender rights. But the stranger did exactly what State Senator Marco Elias did when he was pushing for this bill, basically suggesting if you oppose it, you hate transgender kids, and you're okay with transgender kids killing themselves. And we have to forcefully reject any effort to paint this as an issue of either you hate transgender kids or you don't, because that's not what it's about. It's about parental rights. And so, yeah, it was important. I found it important to push back at the stranger's characterization and the stranger trying to fearmonger opposition to this, basically trying to paint me as a transphobe and anyone else who opposes it. And we talk about this all the time, which is if reasonable people don't want to be called a transphobe, reasonable people are scared of labels like that. And that's the way that some of these lawmakers and the stranger try to get you to shut up, is by saying, oh, you're right wing, you're a transphobe. And we have to push past that and be like, no, I'm not. I'm not right wing. I'm not a transphobe. And I have reasonable opinions about this and reasonable, rational opinions about this. And so that was why I was so firm, me and Nicole, in saying, no, we're going to get a correction that is good enough from the stranger on this and make a point to them. And I made a point, and I'll just wrap up here on this issue. I made a point at the end of my last email to Rich Smith that I would encourage him to reconsider calling someone like me a transphobe, someone who I consider myself an ally to the LGBTQ community. I have many friends in that community. And to paint me as a transphobe and alienate an ally because you don't like my politics is not only hurtful to me individually, but I think that it is damaging as a whole to society's willingness to accept people for who they are. So I just left the stranger with that little thought about, you know, maybe you should be more careful about who you call a transphobe and reserve that word for someone who is actually transphobic. So that's the update on the stranger. You know what else we have to do today? On the show yesterday, I forgot to do an Eastside Weight Loss Clinic commercial. And so I was like, well, now I got to do like two today or just an extra long one. So what I decided to do to make up for it is to show a picture I'm very embarrassed by for people on the live stream. Nicole and I were having dinner last night and I showed her this picture and I was like, why didn't you tell me I looked this bad? Why didn't you tell me I looked that bad?
I did. Friends do not.
You're very far away from your mic right now.
Well, we have a little bit of a,
you just got to talk into
it. Setup today, but yeah, I mean, you look gorgeous. What are you talking about?
Look, I look overweight. If you're watching on the stream, it's a picture of me in October at an event, and I look like I'm struggling to fit into my dress. And then on the right is me in Las Vegas at Adele, looking like a complete bombshell. And look, all shapes and sizes are beautiful. Well, maybe not all shapes and sizes. Like, you can't be clinically obese and that's not beautiful. That's a medical condition. But I feel so much better now. I feel so much better. And in fact, I'm 35 pounds, maybe even 36, like between 35 and 36 on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. And I lost most of that in just 2 months. So if you've been thinking, maybe like me, you gained 42 pounds during the pandemic, or you saw a picture of yourself and you were thoroughly just disgusted, try the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. But it's not just about dropping weight. It's about just learning to eat a little healthier and also to focus on certain food groups, et cetera, et cetera. So check out eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Get in touch with Dr. Ryan Coogan. And it's just a little 15-minute consultation. And it could change your life if you've seen a picture of yourself that you're just not happy with. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule that free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Coogan, but make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided Podcast with me, Brandi Cruz. I'm going to delete that picture at some point. I want to be able to move on from that picture.
It's helping people.
But that's the thing, is I hear from subscribers who are like, oh, I'm down 10 pounds, 20 pounds, or my husband and I are doing it together. And then that makes me feel good. And then showing a picture that I hate of myself over and over is a little bit easier.
We were talking about this last night, but there's a little bit of So people, we both lost some weight. And so when people tell you you've lost weight, it's nice. But then at the same time in my head, I'm like, oh, so you noticed I was fat.
But that's what I told you last night at dinner is, which is you had to have noticed I put on 42 pounds. And I wish one of my friends had just been like, hey, man, love you. But, you know, you're putting on a little weight.
Did you not know?
Look, I knew, but I think a little shaming from you would have helped.
We all know.
Anyway, okay, that's it. We'll move on from that. You guys are like, Brandy, stop talking about it. Okay, let's dip outside of Washington State for just a moment. Go to Georgetown University, where they have announced that they're going to hold separate graduation ceremonies for people of color. So they're going to hold, and this is according to Campus Reform, they've announced that in May, Georgetown University is going to hold three segregated graduation ceremonies for students of different heritages. So they're going to do one that's going to cater to students of Asian American heritage, one for the Latinx community, and one for seniors who identify with communities of African descent. So, and Campus Reform is calling this segregation, of course. Georgetown University wouldn't consider it segregation. I will say I'm a little torn on this. Nicole's like, what? Mm-hmm. The only reason, I mean, of course, I don't think that they should have segregated graduation ceremonies. Like, that's ridiculous. But it sounds to me like part of this is to have specific celebrations that honor someone's specific cultural traditions. Now, if they're going to have one big graduation ceremony and then do these offshoot branch cultural heritage celebrations, or maybe they celebrate in different ways, like, that angers me a little less. I still think it's really dumb, because I think you can incorporate your heritage and your culture into the larger graduation ceremony, and then everyone can see, like, what is something that you do or a way you celebrate or something you wear during graduation, during, like, an important moment in your life, and then other people who aren't from that cultural heritage can see it, and they could be like, oh, that's really cool. Explain that to me. So I think it, I mean, I do think it's dumb and ridiculous and done for, like, just the sake of wokeness, but I think it's interesting to, because there are cultures that celebrate big milestones in different ways. I think it's an interesting thing to incorporate that. But why do you have to segregate out white people in order to do that?
Right. And I think that's the problem, is you have to take out and say you're not invited. I mean, it's definitely a you're not invited if you don't fit these cultures, right?
Right.
Instead of, you know, come be a part of it. So it would be very exclusionary as opposed to inclusive.
Yeah, it's very strange. And it said, Georgetown put out an event description for one of them saying, this ceremony collectively celebrates the individual achievements of students in obtaining college diplomas and honors the community and legacy Black graduating students have created and actively cultivated here at Georgetown. And so again, it's like, have like people of other races not cultivated an active community at Georgetown? Like, that's very strange. And then it goes on to talk about the last event, which is Despedida will be held in order to celebrate the cultural diversity and history of the Latinx community and serves to recognize the completion of a rigorous journey through academia and involvement in various organizations at Georgetown. And again, have white people not had a rigorous journey through academia? It's just strange. Why do you guys have to be so weird? Why do you have to make everything so freaking weird? Oh, anyway. Okay, let's get to comments, shall we? And also on the YouTube stream, we're going to start doing a little poll every day on a topic that we're discussing. And the poll that I started at the beginning of the show was, will Washington's assault rifle ban survive legal challenges? 16% said yes. 84% said no. I guess we'll find out. Okay, let's comments, questions. Comments. Sergeant Pickles. We wrote a comment from Sergeant Pickles earlier. He or she said, I am certain in the long run, assault weapon bans and magazine bans will be made unconstitutional. Only question is if a judge grants an injunction on the law before then. And I think that's an important part of it is, are they going to prohibit this from taking effect until the constitutionality can be determined? Larry writes, already ridiculous the amount of time and taxpayer money they're going to have to spend defending these unconstitutional laws. And they have no care or concern for that. They truly don't. Dennis writes, more people die in auto accidents. More people are killed by blunt weapons or hands and feet. Drugs, about 50 die from drugs for everyone killed by a firearm. And I don't have the stats in front of me to confirm your claims about deaths by hands and feet. But I've also indicated that when it comes specifically to so-called assault rifles, in the grand scheme of the firearm deaths and homicides in Washington state, the vast majority of them are not happening with what they are calling assault weapons. And so it's silly to me, and it's also silly that they continue to, Democrats continue to put forth proposals to take it easy on criminals who actually commit crimes with guns and to lessen punishments. And it's like, how can you have both? How can you say you care about quote-unquote gun violence, but you want to take it easy on these people who commit acts of quote-unquote gun violence, and then you want to make it harder for law-abiding citizens to exercise their Second Amendment rights? It's so weird. Again, why do you have to be so weird? Why does everybody have to be so weird? Autumn writes on Patreon, you know how immigrants who come here have to pass a test to become a citizen? I think politicians should have to pass a civics test to become politicians. Too many don't know or understand basic constitutional rights of the people to be able to speak for the people. I tend to agree. Weisscastle writes, I don't like the way the stranger is treating Brandy. However, Trump was treated the exact same by 90% of the world's media and almost every Democrat. Both pee me off. Can I say that word on? I've been told to swear less. Told to swear less. Both pee me off. Gil says, we have got to stop compartmentalizing people into these arbitrary groups. It is not helpful. It's destructive. It plays into politicians' hands. Nothing good comes from it. And what do you think that's in reference to? Gil's comment. Are you talking about you're a transphobe or you're right wing? Because if that's what you're talking about, I agree. I mean, I think it's lazy to call.
I think that's from the college, the campus.
Oh, the college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, it's not an arbitrary group per se. It is people of a certain background or heritage. But I think if your goal is to truly become a society that America was meant to be, then continuing to put people in groups based on skin color to celebrate on their own, as opposed to all of us celebrating the collective heritage and life experiences that we have as we emerge from college, it's just weird and it's counterproductive to living in a society that should be celebrating all of our unique differences and celebrating our ability to do that together. Again, people are just absolutely super strange. Okay, let's get to, shall we? I want to update you on the results of the tax that I endorsed. But so a lot of you got down on me for endorsing the Proposition 1 in King County, which raises property taxes to help pay for crisis care. I am going to explain to you, though, why I have come to the conclusion that I am, in fact, the sane one. It is our sanity check for today. So I endorsed King County Proposition 1, which I know angered some of you, although we had some good rigorous debate and disagreement on it. So King County Proposition 1 is a response to the crisis that we see playing out on our streets. You know, it's homelessness, but it's much more than that. It is substance abuse, it's mental health issues, and the state of our mental health care and system in Washington state is almost non-existent. And we have people who are habitual repeat offenders because they're mentally ill and they just cycle in and out of the criminal justice system. We're not holding them accountable. We're not getting them help. And I have been preaching for so long that the answer to homelessness is not housing, like Governor Jay Inslee suggests. It's mental health care and it's substance abuse treatment. So since I've been preaching that, and since King County came forth and said, hey, we want to spend, we want to increase property taxes to spend money to dedicate it toward mental health care, I thought, well, look, I can't talk out of both sides of my mouth, so I have to vote yes on this. And I told you, vote how you want, but I let you know that that's how I was voting. And I will just update you on the election results. Not very many people. You know what? Like, the turnout's going to end up being something like 30%. And so I kind of don't want people to complain about me voting to increase taxes if they didn't vote at all, because 30% of people voting is a little ridiculous. Right now, the turnout's at 21%, but they still have ballots to count. So right now it is passing, 54% approved, 45% rejected. So it looks like it is something that is going to pass. But if you thought I was insane for supporting King County Proposition 1, I want to present you with Exhibit A as to why I am, in fact, the sane one. Because there was an op-ed in The Stranger that said that you should oppose King County Proposition 1. We could pull it up. It's titled, King County's Crisis Care Centers Will Perpetuate Incarceration by Another Name. And this op-ed is written by someone named P. Hardy. And they describe themselves as a lifelong learner and aspiring abolitionist organizer. So look, the abolitionists want you to vote against Proposition 1. So doesn't that mean, doesn't sanity tell you to do the exact opposite of what the abolitionists want? And so I think that means that I was not, in fact, insane for supporting Proposition 1, because if the abolitionists don't support it, then surely the sane thing to do is to support it. And I'm just going to single-handedly take credit for the fact that Proposition 1 is passing, obviously. You know, I'm so humble and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it looks like Proposition 1 is going to pass. Property taxes will go up a little bit. I promise I'll watchdog every cent of it. We will watchdog every cent of that money. Because that wasn't an easy vote for me. I see what you guys see. I see a government that has wasted billions of dollars to no avail. We have a worse homeless crisis, drug crisis, mental health crisis than ever before. But at least you have a recognition of where the money should be spent. And so I hope that this makes a difference. And I hope that it can make such a difference that other politicians like Jay Inslee, who think that we need to solve this through housing, can rethink that a little bit. Okay, before we close, I just want to note we have some interviews coming up tomorrow and on the subscriber-only show on Sundays with two Democratic lawmakers on some issues that you care quite a bit about. And it was nice to get them here in studio to sit down for lengthy conversations about the legislative session. We talked to them about the failure to get a drug possession law on the books, the failure to make meaningful progress on the police pursuit issue, the passing of the assault weapons ban, and the passage of Senate Bill 5599, which we've discussed at length on the show. So we're going to play some of those interviews, a chunk of those interviews tomorrow, but also if you want to watch them in their entirety, you also would need to subscribe to Sundays with Subscribers by becoming a subscriber to the podcast. You can do that at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. It is your one-stop shop for all things Undivided. If you go there, you can figure out how to watch video clips from the show, how to listen to the podcast. You can contact Nicole or I, or you can figure out how to subscribe on Patreon or Locals for as little as $5 a month. But they were really good conversations. I appreciate lawmakers joining us in the studio to debrief on the legislative session and talk through some issues that I happen to disagree with them on quite a bit. All right, thank you all for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers, and we will see you back here at noon tomorrow for Nicole's birthday.
Oh.
Oh, good. Okay, see you then. Remembered.